the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1096, and it's the Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What's happening?
And from Austin, Texas, author, speaker, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
Good to have you back, Jamie. We missed you.
I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
Guys, this is a big, big day for the Relevant family. If you notice the show title, our guest today is none other than Derek Miner. Derek, why are you the guest today?
Because I got an album that's out. I've been today. Laboring over this thing. I'm so excited to put this thing out and for everybody to listen. We've got a visual commentary on YouTube where you can get my breakdown on all the songs. We in here, baby. We floating.
It's exciting, dude.
Derek, describe the feeling of release week. Is it like is it relief? Is it excitement? Is it like nervousness? Or is it kind of all of the above? You know what I mean? Because I feel like you put so much time in up to this point. What's it like when the week finally comes?
It's been different for different albums. I would say this album, I'm like happy and excited, and I've never been this stress free with a project ever. So
that's good.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm just like, man, I just want to see how people enjoy it. You know what I mean?
See, the thing that is different for what you do and Jamie with your books and stuff, like you guys work on this one thing for a year or more. And it's like building up to this moment right now, today it's coming out and you deploy it. And the next 2 years of your life are completely dependent on what happens with this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With us, we would put a magazine out and if it was a dud, we're working on the next one. You know what I mean? We could erase our flops pretty quickly, but there's a lot of pressure on this thing. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. I mean, there is a lot of pressure on it, but I'm going.
I wasn't stressed before I started talking to Cameron.
Now,
oh my God.
Well, I mean,
listen, Derek, I'm not going to lie. I'm having anxiety for you right now.
Why are you not stressed? You're excited about it because this project isn't different. And yes, listener, we will have a proper interview with Derek coming up to talk really about the project and all the things. But I mean, I think it's interesting that this is your most vulnerable project. This is, you know, your biggest risks that you've taken musically, and you've poured so much into it that you're actually not nervous today. I'd be in a ball in the corner right now.
You know what? I think because when I made the album, this album is it's not just about the money. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not just about the album sales, but it's really for people. Like, you gotta think, I've been touring this thing. Like, I've connected with people in a way that is bigger than any stream or whatever. It's the people that this is gonna impact is literally, they know where it's at. They're gonna get it when they need it, and that's what it's for. So I'm just thankful really to just put it out and just see how people can connect with the story. When it's your story, you know, you worry about how people are going to understand it and how, you know, what they interpret it correctly. But at the end of the day, it's my story. It's where I've been. So there's no reason for me to necessarily be afraid, because no one can tell me that my story was wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one can say I was wrong about, you know, hey, this didn't happen to you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not really trying.
Oh, they'll try, Derek. Don't you wait.
Yeah, they'll try.
Don't you worry.
They'll try. But they're idiots. So, like, I'm not even going to trip
off. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
I love it.
You know, the authenticity of it, man. So, well, congrats, man. It's a massive, massive achievement, man. And I'm stoked for people to hear it.
I think one of the hardest things, Derek, about releasing projects, or for me, books into the world, is that, like, you know that for book projects, for sure, I know the date forever. Like, I have a book coming out February 13th, 2024. Mm-hmm. I've known that date for 8 months now. Okay. So that's the date. And you know it and you talk about it, you talk about it, you talk about it. And then you wake up on February 13th, 2024. And guess what? Like, you still have to take kids to school. Mm-hmm. You still have to like be with your family. You still have to do all the things. You still got emails to do. So I always find that release dates are kind of this like weird thing because you're so very excited. And yet you actually still do your regular life that day. Yeah. It's just kind of, it was weird to me the first time I ever released something into the world. Yeah. With a date, like, oh my gosh, this date is so exciting. And then it came and then it went and then you still keep working. It was very weird to me.
Yeah, kids got to go to football practice. They got to go to football games. You know what I mean? You still got to make dinner. You know, like, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
But do you sit there and like refresh the charts and stuff all day? Like just to see? Like, or do you?
I used to for sure. Like I used to be glued to them things. And I'm sure I'll look at them because that's the fun part, right? You want to see how far it's going. But I try to like not look. I try to be like, okay, I'm going to look once a day. Yeah. Once, maybe twice a day. In the morning, at night, and then that's going to be that. Because if you look at it throughout the day, man, you're going to be a wreck.
Like, yeah, dude, that is real. I remember back in the day, you know, helping out with a lot of web content, and I had like an analytics app on my phone where I could see real time analytics of how many people were looking at stuff. And I would wake up in the middle of the night and be like, oh, I'm kind of curious. Let's see. And then it became like an unhealthy thing where I was always fixated on how many people. Like, it's. I think to your point, Derek, at some point, you know, there's a limit to what's healthy in terms of kind of just understanding, you know, because, you know, what's the serenity prayer? You know, God grant me the wisdom to control things I can control, to not be worried about the things I can't, and to know the difference in between the two. Something I'm butchering
like that. Sounds great. Yeah, I love it. Love it.
Camera, you crazy.
Love it.
Close enough. I circled it. You got it.
It is. I know. We know what you meant.
But you know,
none of us could say it.
What I found too, though, like I think. We could look at albums that put so much pressure on the first week of an album or a book sale. But man, albums can come in people's lives at any point in time. So for me, it's just knowing I got the rest of my life to tell people about this work. It's going to be relevant for the rest of our lives. I think that's another reason why I'm not really stressed on this album, because it wasn't about making trendy music, or it wasn't about trying to fit into what's happening right now so I can, you know, make as much, you know, sell as many albums right now. I feel like you could play this album 5 years from now and it's still going to be relevant and it's still going to connect with people. So I think that's another reason why I'm not stressed. I'm like, I got my whole life to tell people about this.
Great.
I saw on Instagram last night, I don't know how, like a rapper was touring in Europe opening for Limp Bizkit. And so I get a lot of music posts in my feed, and I was like, Limp Bizkit's touring Europe? And I swiped to look at the clips the dude posted. Limp Bizkit was playing 1999, you know, metal rap songs for 50,000 people in Berlin last week. And they knew every word and they were going nuts. I'm going, I can't believe people are still listening to this music, you know, 20 something years later, but it was important to them. Anyway, I'm just saying that about your album, dude. People will be listening to this album in 20 years. That's so the thing. Good.
When you make something that connects,
I'm not
with people,
comparing you to Limp Bizkit. Just FYI,
no, I was like, hey, hold up, bro.
chill out. But I think the point is like, even if it's like, despite like, you know, the kind of artistic merits, obviously, like to Cameron's point, we certainly put you in a different category than Limp Bizkit. when you make art that resonates with people for one reason or another, maybe it's for nostalgic reasons, maybe it's for like artistic reasons, maybe it's for emotional or spiritual ones, you know, it'll always be meaningful. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing about art that, you know, has some degree of authenticity. And not to go on some kind of rant here, but like, especially in an era where there's so much disposable content, stuff that either is designed to disappear within 24 hours, like a reel or a story or Snapchat, or, you know, stuff that just like drips through a feed or is on your Netflix screen for like a week and then you kind of forget about it forever. Like making something that resonates, you know, I do think that's a really good perspective to have. It's like, dude, it's not just about how many people listen week one or month one. It's, dude, this could be, you know, with people for a long time, you know.
And 20 years from now, Derek, you know, if everything goes well, you could be opening for Limp Bizkit in Stockholm. All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you. Like I said, coming up later, we're going to get into this album with Derek. We also have your feedback at the end of the show. But stay tuned. Coming up next, Emily joins us for Relevant Buzz. You're listening to Jay Wood. The song is Dirk Gently. Know yourself. Not sure what's next after college? Ready to step out of your comfort zone and into something meaningful? Check out the Global Ambassador Program from ELIC. You'll spend 9 months, September to May, on a team of passionate people just like you in Thailand, Tunisia, or Uzbekistan. You'll grow through mentorship, take language classes, immerse yourself in a new culture, and teach English to the local community, all while building real-life skills and making a real impact. Sound good? Head to elic.org/relevant to learn more. Again, that's elic.org/relevant. Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
Please welcome to the show our managing editor, Downtown Emily Brown, who is joining us from Chicago today to tell us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture. Hey, Emily.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, Emily. How's the windy city?
Very windy. I can be outside and not want to like sweat or cry. This is like a new experience for me, so I'm trying to embrace it.
Wow. Nashville's been sweaty.
Have you seen the bean yet?
I have not seen the bean. We have to go.
But can I be honest? I'm not missing much. Picture a big
oh, I love it.
Metal
have you been? But, have you been to a carnival where they have the curvy mirrors and the fun mystery fun house?
Yeah.
Have you? Okay, that's what it is. It's outside.
Hey, man, y'all gonna quit hating on the little Chicago bean now, bro.
That's I love it.
Listen, it's not like I'm some travel expert, okay? But, like, the public art is fine, okay? But, like, if I see a picture, there's nothing functionally different than me seeing it in person. I've never seen, like, you know, you see that bull on Wall Street or whatever, you know, like.
So you mean the Grand Canyon? If you saw the Grand Canyon in person versus the picture,
I'm not saying
matter.
Natural. I'm saying works of public art. It's like, yep, look exactly like the picture that I saw. Why not go and spend your time if you're in one of these cities, like, eating something or like, you know, experiencing something. Like I said.
So you're saying the pyramids.
You can do
if
both.
You go see the pyramids, it's better to just look at it on a picture.
I'm not saying it's better, but I'm saying I think I would be like, all right, they're exactly like what I thought they
it's
would
a
look
big
like.
Triangle.
That's crazy.
I saw pictures on my phone. On the way
Emily,
here.
if you're lucky, you'll see someone get engaged. Oh, that always happens at places like that. Last time I was there, a man got down on one knee, asked a woman to be his bride forever, and I did take photos. Yes. And
did
I have them in my phone.
Yes?
I don't know them.
Know the
she
was
did
like
say
a
yes.
Romantic okay, spot.
Okay. It's just a spot. It's not romantic.
It's a whole bunch of tourists standing there taking selfies going, okay, there's a big curvy mirror. What's for lunch?
Like, I mean, that's
all awesome. Y'all some haters, bro. You don't like superhero movies. You don't like beans made out of mirrors.
No, Derek, maybe you're missing the point here. I have nothing against the bean. I'm just saying time is better. Like the first time I went to New York City, I remember it was Christmas time and I elbowed my way to the front of the railing on Rockefeller Center to see people ice skating. And I'm like, oh, this is exactly what it looked like in my mind when I saw Home Alone when I was a kid, when I've seen numerous films that this is featured in. My time would have been better spent experiencing other things. Emily, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm gonna capitulate because you know what? New York has a bunch of things that when you're a kid, you like, man, I can't wait to go see these things. And then you go see them like Times Square. I was like, this is it. So
I think everything deserves one time.
Yes.
Like, you know, like go see the ice skating and then you don't ever have to go back again. Go see the bean, you don't have to ever have to go back again.
Emily, what are you looking forward to seeing when you're in Chicago?
That's a really good question. So I'm actually here because I helped my friend move. So we have been focusing on that mostly. So I actually haven't seen anything.
She's staying in Wicker Park, which is a great part of town. Good food, good coffee. You're in a good area. I would go in the Loop, just kind of walk the Loop. It's incredibly clean downtown, good food down there. You can see the Bean, you can see the waterfront, the Navy Pier, that kind of junk. Go walk Miracle Mile with all the shopping. That's a good afternoon. Mm-hmm. You know, just do that. But you hanging out in Wicker Park is actually a good area to be, like, spending time.
Yeah, I've gotten to know a lot of good coffee shops the last few days.
You go to Intelligentsia?
Okay.
I told her that yesterday. I told her to go to Intelligentsia.
There is one in Wicker Park, but I looked it up. It's permanently closed.
Oh. Wow.
Well, there's one in the Loop. If you go down to the Loop, you can hit up Intelligentsia.
Can I be honest? Another thing about Intelligentsia?
What?
I'm kind of a Dunkin' guy.
Stop right now.
I felt like I walked into an episode of Portlandia and I was like, this is ridiculous.
We're thankful for your contribution.
Where's the nearest Dunkin'?
We're thankful to your contribution.
Give me, I want a culotta,
you
please.
You and Ben Affleck. Dunkin'
you go into Intelligentsia and ask for a culotta.
Can I get a mocha cinnamon birthday cake culotta?
Birthday cake. Just pure sugar with like the tiniest bit of coffee.
Probably.
Don't know. Never asked. That's the thing. When you go into Dunkin', you don't ask about the ingredients. It's not Intelligentsia where it's sourced from. The thing is, I don't care.
I care about the end product. Dunkin' more than I would.
The problem with Dunkin' is like Conan and I will swing by a drive-through Dunkin' on the way to church half the time, and the problem with Dunkin' is like I'll get like a cold brew or a nice coffee or whatever, and I'll just like a little cream and some Splenda or whatever just to take the bitterness off, and they hand me what looks like a large cup of milk. They always put so much cream in it. Like, is that your experience or do you like that?
Because people that go to Dunkin' are not drinking it necessarily for the coffee. They're drinking it for the milk, the sugar.
The culotta experience.
This is nasty.
They're drinking it for the combinations there, right?
And
for the donuts. Like, Dunkin' got some fire donuts.
My kids love the coffee at Dunkin', so there's that.
I know. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's coffee.
Right. It's the milk and the sugar, right? Yes.
Uh-huh.
There you go. All right, so what's happening this week, Emily?
Well, Dunkin' Donuts. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about that.
Still doing great. Still doing fantastic. There's a reason their business model works. Yeah. You don't see Dunkin's closed up in Wicker Park, do you?
I actually don't. Hey, they're across the street from where the Intelligentsia was.
And still kicking. They're survivors. Dunkin' is the cockroach of this country. It is unkillable. Nothing. You can put the nicest coffee shop across the street. Nothing's going to kill a Dunkin'.
Have you noticed, though, they rebranded just Dunkin', right? Obviously, because they're trying to get off the donuts. Mm-hmm. But they still, on like the side of the building or in their signage, they still have DD as their logo. They say Dunkin' on the sign, and then they go DD. And I'm like,
listen, you're overthinking. You're overthinking. Dunkin' is a place about underthinking, okay? No overthinking here.
I'm just
you've
like,
arrived at a Dunkin'.
If you're gonna rebrand fully and don't use DD, you know, on your wall art.
They do
that's
a lot
all
of things halfway. Okay,
make
like they got the main sign swapped out, and that was enough. They were like, "That's good
enough.
We're good.
People are coming. We're Dunkin'. We're unkillable." Anyway, sorry, Emily.
Go ahead.
Okay, the first actual thing I want to talk about is there's a recent rise in prosperity gospel beliefs. You know, we've talked a lot about the financial situation in America, so obviously people are praying for their financials to change. Mm-hmm. But a new survey from Lifeway Research found that 52% of American churchgoers believe God will bless them if they give money to their church. And specifically among people ages 18 to 34, 81% believe that God genuinely wants them to have amazing finances, like not just stable, but more than they need. And so it's been a message that has been rising in recent years. Like I said, 52% believe that now. Back in 2017, only 5 years ago, only 38% believe that. So it's grown a lot. And a lot of people when surveyed, when they were asked, you know, where did you hear this message? Why did you start believing it? A lot of them affirm that they're hearing this from their churches and from their pastors who are preaching it.
What's interesting is I grew up, Jesse grew up in like the Pentecostal charismatic world. Prosperity gospel is just kind of in the woven into all of it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, faith, you believe God for, you know, all the things. But it's interesting that this is from Lifeway Research, because Baptists typically have completely rejected the prosperity gospel thing. And so it's interesting that this is coming from Lifeway. And there's such a big jump during COVID, during the pandemic, you know?
It seems like part of it was people, because they're wanting their finances to change, they're really trying to just believe that this is true, so that their situation will be different.
I am curious about what the correlative like connections are, you know, like I know maybe it is that you know, in this comes from a time of deep uncertainty about a lot of things, including just the economy, that people think, you know, if they're insecure about something and they relate, you know, God to a feeling of some degree of security or comfort, that they would, you know, assume that he wants you to have the thing that would provide that for you in a time of uncertainty. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, like a Dunkin' manager who changed two signs instead of one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know for me, I grew up Pentecostal, and I grew up around a lot of people that struggled financially. And Cannon just walked in my podcast. Hey, how are you?
What's up?
You know, it's actually going, the podcast actually on right now.
What's up, Cannon?
Yeah. But sorry about that.
It's fine. It's just a little celebrity drop in, you know. Another day in the life of Derek Minor, you know.
All right. But anyhow, back to what I was saying, that it's crazy that I think this is as predictable, because I know prosperity gospel was huge when we were growing up, but it's because a lot of people just were hurting and they needed relief. So I could definitely see, with inflation being crazy, I mean, price of food, and we're not even talking about inflation and stuff that you don't need. We're talking about stuff that you actually need to survive. Right. I could see why people would lean more into that. And I think that there is some, I mean, there is truth to that. God wants to see us be taken care of. Like, that's why Jesus talks about the flowers of the field and his eyes on the sparrow, and they don't worry about what they're going to eat, and how the flowers of the field are dressed prettier than any creation. So I think there's a nuance there. But I mean, yeah, this is pretty predictable to me.
I would think my question that I would love to hear is, I wonder if there's any kind of political allegiance here with this switch, because there's a lot of conversations in the political sphere about the economy and, you know, former President Trump's whole thing about Make America Great Again, like this idea that like we used to be this and now we're not. And I wonder if people are feeling this financial strain and associate with the political party, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm just like way out in left field here or not.
Which side is which, Jamie? Hit me to this, because this is a new concept for me. So which side do people lean more for the prosperity, and which side do they lean more for the
other side? I feel like
Republicans are more money driven and Democrats are more socially equality driven.
But
you know, so
to Jamie's point,
wait a minute, time out. So you said that the Republicans are often the ones that are big proponents of the prosperity gospel?
I don't think that at all, but there's a big switch. Like, I don't think we can get away from how big this gap is from just 5 years ago, right?
Okay.
What were the numbers? And so to me, it feels like that the big switch would be, again, I could be in left field. The big switch could be more Republicans saying, hey, God wants us to be wealthy. God wants us to be this. And what's happening in our country is not allowing that to happen. That could be left field. I don't know.
Well, just growing up in it, to be honest with you, the 90s, the moral majority, you know, the Republican Christian conservative movement was tightly aligned with the charismatic prosperity gospel world, televangelist world, more financially driven, give to get, you know.
This
like
is a crazy layer for me, because growing up in a black church,
right,
like it it's crazy just seeing the overlap there. Like,
yeah,
because mm-hmm. yeah. most of the yeah. people that I grew up with, I don't think they would be considered Republicans.
No, probably not.
I would say a lot of them did watch a lot of those televangelists on TV, so they would be fed those types of things, which this, I got to go. My brain has to decompress now. This is a lot right now.
But Jamie, I think the point you brought up too is like maybe it's not even like the political alignment when it comes to like economic conditions, but even just like this greater idea of you're saying like make America great again, like the idea of like the manifest destiny, right? Mm-hmm. Like this philosophy that God has ordained America yeah. as special and favored as a shining city on a hill. And if you live there, then you should take mm-hmm. part in that prosperity. If they're sort of like I said, that sort of manifest destiny trickle down yep. that kind of permeates theology too. It's speculative, but I do think it's an interesting speculation, you know.
I could see a lot of that just trickling down into that with this, like, we are God's country and we used to be a Christian nation. Now we need to take it back. And that would all lean into that, like, God wants for us. And the truth of the matter
is, God bless America. God bless my finances. Exactly. God wants to bless, prosper, have abundance. Yeah, it's definitely exactly. the same line of thinking. Is totally. But what's interesting to me is y'all are just seeing this shift with Trump. This has been the narrative in that weird political Christian kind of overlappy world since the 80s. I mean, it really has.
Totally, but I think Trump took it to a new level he's like, we got to go back to where we were.
He did.
Like that, yeah.
And I'm saying this as a kid who had a front row seat, because my dad published Charisma Magazine, which was the magazine of the prosperity gospel faith movement, you know, and all that. So, like, this was my world growing up, and the political stuff started to really overlay in the 90s, you know, so, like, the political
stuff. My brain is exploding right now. Y'all,
I mean, funny
no
thing
clue.
Is, joke's on us, because the majority of Christians around the world, like, their idea of blessing and prosperity and our prosperity and blessing is completely different. Totally and different. I would say that theirs lines up more with the gospel of, like, our prosperity is, like, that we have hope and that we have love and that we have kindness and we have peace and... I'll be honest with you.
I felt like an outsider on the inside with how I grew up. I felt like an outsider on the inside at ORU back then, because it was the president of the university at the time was a televangelist. And, you know, I remember specifically we had a revival service at college, and a televangelist came and spoke. I'm not going to say his name. And he spoke the entire sermon. Again, this is a revival evening service. All the students had to go. And he spoke the entire sermon talking about how he believed God for a new plane and God gave him his new plane. I'm telling you, by the end of the sermon, people are running up and down the aisles. They are worked up into a frenzy. Mm. Not one scripture was spoken during the entire service. And I thought to myself, as a student watching this, like an outsider on the inside, I'm going, Lord, you know, like, never let me forget what this looks like. And I want to share a gospel message that will preach in all four corners of this globe. And like, this sermon will not play in Africa. This sermon will not play in Asia. You know, like, this sermon, this isn't the gospel. You know what I mean?
In prisons in America.
Right. But here's the crazy thing is the charismatic movement, the spirit-filled movement, is the movement globally that it's exploding. Latin America, Asia, and Africa. The global church is booming, and it's all charismatic preaching or teaching and theology, and it's this line of thinking. And the biggest and wealthiest churches and pastors in the world are actually African. And the you know, you go to Nigeria and stuff, and they're preaching the prosperity gospel to people who are in the deepest poverty you can imagine, and they're eating it up. And I don't understand it.
So from a person that, like I said, I grew up in the trenches, it's hope.
Yeah.
Like it's easier, like, when you have a lot of money, like, money is, it's not valued. Like, it's just like anything in the world. If I had a lot of eggs, I wouldn't value eggs, right? But when you don't have anything and someone tells you that God wants you to have your needs supplied, you're gonna buy it. And the fact is, it's really nuanced, right? Because God does want our needs supplied. but some of our needs are different than others. And sometimes when we get money, it's not because God is blessing us. It's because of our intuition. It's because of our business acumen. It's because of where we came from, because we have support from our family. There's a whole plethora of reasons that we have money besides the fact that God said, I'm going to give this guy a lot of money, right? But when you're in impoverished situations, like you're just like, man, I'm working my best and all I can do is just survive and scrape by. You're looking for a level of reprieve. And that's why it's blown my mind, because I was like, was this a strategy as far as like growing these ministries, which was for rich white churches to go into impoverished black and brown communities and pray on
their we have a winner.
Yeah, I'm like, pray on their desire to be safe. And then they're saying, okay, well, if I just give my rent money to God, God's going to take care of me, rather than going into these communities and actually teaching financial literacy and things like that. Because that's what, when you say outsider, insider, I was the same thing for me, but it wasn't like a, oh, why are these people buying this? It was like, dang, man, why don't we just all just like work on saving our money? Like in my little small teenage young mind, I was thinking about that. And I was like, man, I feel like this guy is capping a little bit, like he's lying. And it felt predatory for me growing up. It felt predatory. So I think if that's the case, that's a lot of layers that need to be unpacked and, you know what I mean? But at the same time, we can't judge people that are broke for wanting to not be broke and thinking that God is going to liberate them from, because we know poverty creates some awful situations. Like I've seen a person get beat up over a couple dollars, and that's because of poverty, right? You know, so at the same time, we got to be careful.
Yeah. All right, what else do you have, Emily?
I know we're talking about Derek's album later, so I thought it'd be appropriate to have some music news, although this is kind of interesting. Gen Z has been listening to some sad songs lately, like a lot. So Spotify released a report that searches for the term sad skyrocketed this summer among Gen Z users, and it's the most searched term globally. For comparison, it's the 13th most searched term for millennial users. So Gen Z, they are wanting to listen to sad music, and they're looking it up just to play some sad tunes.
They're in the summer. They're calling it the summer of sadness right now.
Are you kidding?
No, they really are.
It's interesting, you know, this too. There's probably a lot to unpack for like some social scientists too, because it's probably anecdotal reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when one song breaks out, other songs like that also kind of find legs. But I also wonder, like, have you guys ever heard of the therapy term, like pain shopping? Like people who, you know, are experiencing different levels of kind of anxiety or depression often look for things that make them feel, you know, like ultimately more validated in their feelings, but, you know, will seek out things that make them almost more depressed and more sad. You know, like people who've experienced trauma often go like pain shopping. I wonder if there's some sort of collective response to just how like vitriolic the culture has become and how angry things have become. Like if it's just, you know, people looking for a way to deal with, you know, what it's like living in a culture that is angry a lot, you know.
Emily and I were talking about this yesterday, and I my kid's Gen Z, obviously, and so like I'm observing a lot of dynamics with him and his friends and stuff. And so something that strikes me about this, and that it's uniquely Gen Z, it's not millennials, it's number 13 for millennials, it's the younger, is that this is the generation that grew up with a screen in their face at all times, right? And this is the generation that has socially isolated, right? Whereas go back 20 years, we would go to the mall to hang out with our friends. Now I would rather just hang out in my room and chat with my friends on my phone. And so like you're isolating, and isolation begets, honestly, you know, like feeling lonely, and that's depression. And you cocoon yourself, and think about when you're depressed, you don't want to get out of bed, right? You want to stay in bed all day, and you think that the rest will help you, but then you lose your job, and then you get more depressed, and then you don't see friends that day, and you get more depressed, and like it feeds it, like what you're saying, Jesse. And this generation uniquely grew up with this social dynamic of isolation. Whereas at least millennials kind of straddled the transition, and obviously older than that, you know, like grew up with friends around. I think it's largely this. And we talk about the suicide epidemic in Gen Z and the depression epidemic, anxiety epidemic. Of course they're listening to sad music more than any other genre. But beyond
even the technical things, a lot of them missed two formative years of social development. You know what I mean? They were out of, like, for a lot of people, you know, high school, junior high, missing 2 years of that, that's a major, like I said, kind of blow just to, like I said, kind of developing our social skills and our identity in social circles. You know, I think that's also probably a major factor. In addition to, I'm not dismissing the screen thing. I think they kind of feed each other, but I don't think we can discount no other generation had to experience being just missing two years of a critical time, just gone.
Yeah, you know? I do think
it's crazy because it doesn't feel like we've missed that either. But you're right, because I wasn't going to prom or graduating during those times. But for them, that was a huge thing, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I was gonna say, well, to Jesse's point earlier about the idea of pain shopping, that is what a lot of psychologists have discovered, is that there is, listening to sad music, it does, like you said, validate your emotions, and in a way can make you feel less alone because you're not the only one experiencing those sad emotions. But there's also a balance to it where if all you listen to is sad music about being alone and having no friends and never being happy, that's the only message you're hearing. And so you just kind of stay in that cycle. And so there is like some warning about, you know, it's okay if you want to listen to sad music every now and then, but put on some happy music. It might do some good for you. There's with everything, you know, there's like a balance. But yeah, I mean, I do think you're right though, that there are a lot of specifically just sad challenges that Gen Z has been facing over the last few years. So yeah, it's not surprising that they're looking for sad. What is interesting is Spotify is making sad playlists.
They're feeding the beast. Listen to this. This is nuts.
They are.
Listen to this. This is crazy.
Made playlists. You know, like if you search sad, you know, a bunch of different plays will come up. So there's a sad crying mix, sad love song mix, sad rap mix, bummer summer. Like there's just
bummer summer.
I mean, just like dozens of playlists.
Bummer Summer is wild.
Dozens of playlists that just are the saddest songs you can possibly imagine, all in one playlist for you to play.
So if you want to just be alone and cry, Spotify's got you covered.
A playlist for you.
But the other thing too is it might just be a Spotify thing because like I remember like back in the early aughts, you know, I was in college, but I read a book. It was by I was heavily involved in a lot of music journalism, and Andy Greenwald, the writer, he was Spin and Rolling Stone. He wrote a book called Nothing Feels Good, and it was an anthology of the emo scene that had kind of led up to. Part of it is teenagers just like sad music. Like, that was the title of the book. And it was basically about the rise of like post-punk emo. That was about sad. You know, anyone who kind of grew up listening to that genre of music knows emo is short for emotion and often sad emotion. It was meant for like, this is emotional indie rock. Part of it, I think, is just being a teenager. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, like, I don't know if it's necessarily.
That's true. I'm thinking about that.
Like, when I was like, middle school, early high school, that was my peak.
Tell on yourself.
That was my peak emo self. I did have people that called me Emo Lee, which was a fun little nickname.
Emo Lee.
Yeah, but that was also. That was pretty good.
I want to give you a hug right now. That was wrong.
You know, we live and we learn. It made me a better person. But please don't call me that now. But it was like
you are wearing dark black shirt, dark glasses, black hair, black shorts.
She's coming back.
You okay, Emily? Are you having a bummer summer?
Chicago is changing me.
Y'all, leave my Emily alone.
Thank you, Derek.
Go ahead, Emily. Finish.
Well, I was just going to say, like, during that time, that was also, my parents can confirm, my most emotional, angsty time of my life. And so, of course, I was listening to like emo, angsty music because it validated me. And then I learned how to process those emotions, and I went back to listening to bubblegum pop, which is what I listen to all the time now because
Wait a second. So you went from emo to bubblegum
pop? Well, I'd always been a pop girl. Mm-hmm. I've always been one. And then I went to emo music, still listening to like the Jonas Brothers on the occasion, but also emo music. And then I just went back to pop.
All right. So y'all help me out. Who's the biggest emo artist that I would know?
Dashboard Confessional? Or yeah,
Dashboard was big. I love like Dashboard. Jimmy World was big. Taking Back Sunday, Saves the Day. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know
Jesse's just reading his most listened to right now. He's reading his Spotify.
Jesse's got some emo playlists.
I knew Dashboard and Jimmy East World. I knew both of them.
Yeah, all you know, held very special places in my heart at one time. When they come through town, if any of those artists come through town, I'll still like, I kind of want to
Jesse, Limp Bizkit's still touring.
I used to go to concerts all the time because those emo bands are like $10 for a ticket.
Say Anything. Like, I remember seeing Say Anything at the Social in downtown Orlando twice, and like it was like I said, there was and particularly that whole like genre was known for its like live experience. I think partly because there was a collective catharsis of everyone singing sad songs together, like to your point about Dashboard Confessional, one of the most famous sort of contemporary MTV Unplugged session was Chris Carrabba, mainly because everyone sung along to every song because they were expressing emotion along with it. It wasn't like the old Nirvana one or some of the classic for it's like an artist performing. It was a collective experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Bummer summer. All right. What else you have, Emily?
I want to end on a happy note.
Good.
So
Jamie's over here just like, she just put a weighted blanket on. She's just
warm. Good news.
Not the weighted blanket.
Just in from Wall Street. Duncan, never doing better. Never done better. The stock is up, up, up.
Unfortunately, I do not have news about Dunkin' Donuts. Maybe one of these days I will, but I wouldn't hold your breath. I do finally have news about the long-awaited Good Burger 2, which has been years, maybe even decades, in the making. But the teaser trailer is finally here, and we're going to play the clip right now.
Oh, hey, Jackson!
Hey, man. You almost car-burgered me to death.
The new adventures of Ed and Dex starts now!
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can we take your order?
Water?
I think so. Oh yeah, that's water.
None for me, thanks.
Awesome. So as we can see, you know, it's been 26 years since the first film came out, and not much has changed for the characters, Dexter and Ed. Although truthfully, I don't think I would believe the film if they tried to tell me that like Ken Mitchell's character was like a scientist or something, you know, like I expect him to be kind of the same character personally.
I think it's funny that these two guys started out together and went two very different directions in life. Keenan becoming the longest running cast member on SNL, movie star, and Kel becoming a youth pastor. So
and then they come back together for Good Burger.
Yep, for Good Burger too.
I hope Keenan never leaves SNL. The other thing too,
you know what they're saying?
No, Kel's killing it on Nickelodeon too.
He's
had some crazy shows. Like I think it was Game Breakers. My kids used to love that show. Yeah,
but there's talk that Keenan will replace Lorne Michaels when he retires in a few years.
Have you guys also know that Keenan is one of those celebrities that has stopped aging? Like they hit an age and just stopped. I think I've said this before. It happened at Steve Martin at like the age of 20. Like he was a 55-year-old man at age 20 and just stuck there, right? And he's still there.
Yeah,
Keenan hit about 35. I don't know how old he is, but he's looked 35 for the better part of 10 years. And I don't see him. Yeah. I don't see that moving. He's just one of those celebrities that is just always going to be stuck at the same age. I mean, I guess it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Black don't crack unless you drop it.
Wait, what do you mean unless you drop it?
That means if you fall off, you drop it, it'll crack.
Oh.
But if you stay up on your, you stay on top of it.
Black don't jot that down. Well. That's words of wisdom. Well.
Black don't crack unless you drop it.
All right. That'll do it for
Relevant Buzz.
Thanks, Emily. Make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com for more content like that. We're publishing it every day, covering the intersection of faith, culture, and everything in between. All right, stay tuned. Up next, we talk to Derek about his new album. You don't want to miss it. You're going to hear some of it, too.
Yeah.
You're the only one who's righteous. Put my life inside your hands, I know that'd be the right risk. Can't believe I spent so many years trying to fight this. I was in the dark, but now I'm living where the light is. B-I-B-L-E when I sight this. That's the only weapon I need when I'm in a crisis. Feel his presence flowing through my body as I write this. He said test the fruit and that'll show you where the life is. And I know.
You're listening to Forrest Frank and Lecrae. The song is Nothing But the Blood. She was a chronic people pleaser with an unfulfilling career in Hollywood until she surprised everyone by joining a convent. Equal parts tell-all and rallying cry, Sister Monica Claire's memoir, A Change of Habit, reveals how much we stand to gain when we fully embrace our authentic selves. Sister Helen Prejean says it's, quote, for anyone who needs a little love, a little faith right now. A Change of Habit, Leaving Behind My Husband, Career, and Everything I Owned to Become a Nun by Sister Monica Claire is available now wherever books are sold. Okay, the moment is here. Today, our friend Derek Minor releases the highly anticipated album, Nobody's Perfect. And yes, normally Emily does the interviews, but today I wanted to talk to Derek about this project because it's impacted me. It's impacted friends of mine, and I know it's going to impact you. We're going to talk a little bit about the album, his heart behind it. You're going to hear a couple of tracks, but there's no better way to kick off this conversation than you hearing the very first track of this album, the intro. It's called Hallelujah. Here's part of it.
I gave God all my pain, but forgot to give him praise. People thought that I was dead. They threw dirt up on my name. I've been deaf to every lane. I don't hear him anyway. Wrote my verses all in braille. They feel everything I say. Threw myself into the music, but you know that come with hurdles. All that green made me toxic. I might turn a ninja turtle. God put me through the fire like a backwood. The devil tried to smoke my family tree. You ain't getting high on me. When my dad OD swore it took a part of me, I found out about your past. You used drugs as therapy. I was raised by another. He was trying to find peace. Hated how he seen himself, so he took it out on me. Man, that father wound is deep. I'm still talking about this. Switch positions with you both, trying not to wound my kids. Got addictions of my own. I won't get too specific, but I finally understand now. God, I need your hand now. At the hospital so much, doctors knew us by face. Lord done healed us so many times, now they know us by faith. Got my brother out the hood, we'll never be the same. All the nights that we cried about things we couldn't change. All the guilt, all the shame, all the trauma, all the pain. We just pray, we just pray, we just pray, we just pray. Cause some people that I love probably never see again. They ain't dead, just dead to me. We was brothers, we was friends. Man, at least that's what I thought. I don't know what to think. You can resurrect your son and resurrect your love in me. Maybe I'm the one that's strong. Matter of fact, you probably right. I hurt people, they hurt people. That's the cycle of our life. You said pray for your enemies, but do they pray for me? When you building something great, they don't give you bricks for free. Trying to turn all these losses into lessons. I've been asking for the blessings. I don't know if you got the message. I tried to change the world, I had to change me. I know life, it ain't perfect, it's amazing. Tell me what is love if it's pain. This life if it ain't changing. And God, I know it's worth it. Since I'm breathing, I'ma thank you.
Yesterday on Thursday, Derek released a visual commentary, kind of a companion to the album. It's on YouTube and you need to go watch it. I watched it a couple days ago and he shares his heart and his story and sets up every song. I've never seen anything like it. I'm just telling y'all, like, go watch it. I've never seen an artist do this because there was such a clear narrative behind every song, but the visuals are wild. Like he shot like little micro music videos and he shot like AI, did some stuff and everything, every song experience is different. And you need to go watch this on YouTube. And he interjects like kind of like famous clips of or clips of like famous hip hop artists and culture shapers talking about mental health and different things like that. And it's a powerful experience, man. I want to start there. Like, what gave you the idea to do that? Like to introduce the project that way?
So during March and April, I went on tour with the album, and it started off like I didn't know what I was doing. Just I think, you know, I want to say something told me, but I'm just going to say God told me, you know what I'm saying? Like, go out and play the album for people and talk with them about the concepts. And over time, a recurring theme kept coming up. People kept saying, is this experience going to be online? Can I, because I want to, they're like, I don't want to just show people the album. I want to show people what I've learned here with you talking. So when I got back and I finally finished the record, I was thinking like, how in the world could I do this? And that's where the visual commentary came from. It's like, well, people love visuals and people say long form is dead, but I don't believe that. We watch Netflix and we watch TV shows and movies all the time. So I'm like, let me make something that would allow people to easily access what was in my mind when I was making these records.
What is so unique, and I think why that connected so well with people, is because this album has a depth and a message that honestly a lot of music doesn't in general, but especially hip hop. It gets vulnerable, it gets raw, it gets real in a way that about topics and themes that you just don't hear a lot. So the fact that you took it out there to tell people, hey, pay attention, why don't you tell the listeners kind of like your heart and your message and why you took the album this direction?
Man, so I haven't necessarily made an album that's been my own solo album for 5 years. Most of the stuff I've done has been music that's just for TV and film, and that's really for background music. I think this is my first like art piece that I've made in like 5 years. And the reason why is because I was going through a really, really season of just transition, is what I would say. Transitioning from being a young artist, a young man, to a father, to trying to be a better husband. And I was overwhelmed, and I felt, I mean, if I'm being honest, I was in a serious state of depression and a lot of mental challenges. And it was really the process of me saying, I need to step away from doing music and art and just work on myself. And as I began to work on myself, like every album that I've done, like The Trap was that way, Redemption was that way, Empire, all those were birthed out of things I've learned in certain seasons, and I wanted to put them into art. So this is no different. It's just what I've learned this time is the focus is now on me and my healing. And the hope is, as I've walked you through what kind of looked like for my healing, that hopefully you'll get something to grab from. So when you feel discouraged, so you can grab this album and say, nah, my healing is worth pursuing. That's really the big picture.
I haven't heard a hip hop album do this like at all, you know, and it's really remarkable. The intro of this album was a journey for you. You did a bunch of different directions, went a bunch of different directions on it, and where you ended up was so stinking powerful. Talk to me about the intro of the album.
Yeah. So while I'm on this tour, I get an email. So I use this website called Tracklib to get samples, because I'm a sample-based producer. That's what I enjoy. That's the kind of music I like making. So I was flipping this sample, and it was from this gospel choir in Motown, like a Motown, like Detroit gospel choir, whatever. And I get an email from Tracklib, and they say, hey, we normally try to let people know that something's leaving the catalog, but this couldn't happen in this time. So, boom, there's no... you can't use this song. So I emailed them back. I was like, this is literally the intro to my album. I'm wrapping this album up in the next month. Is it possible to reach out to the publishers? No response. So I go on an internet search. I turn into to a detective, and I find out some people in Sweden bought the song, the catalog, and they were like, yo, we're pulling all our stuff off of here. We don't want anyone to use it. I actually got in touch with them and begged them, like, yo, will you please clear this sample? What's the price? Let me know, right? They were like, there is no price. We have plans for this and you can't use it. And that's our final words. I'm like, all right. So as I'm walking in, I'm in New York, and I get this melody in my head, and I go into a bathroom in the venue, and I record a voice memo, and I send it to my partner Quentin, and he sends me back this guitar riff. And the whole time while I was on tour, I would just listen to this guitar riff in my head, and I would just be like, literally, I didn't write much down, but I was writing different things I was feeling in my head. And when I came home, I just recorded all of it, and we built around a guitar and a voice memo, and that's how the intro came to be.
I wanted to go through kind of like, I normally when you know there's a project, there's like two or three songs that really stand out about stand out above all the others. But as we were kind of like preparing for this segment, like I wanted to talk about every song because they're literally all legit, all good. But you do that on that commentary. So yeah. So we're not going to do that on this segment. Everybody go watch this YouTube thing. Derek talks about literally every track. It is worth it because it opens up your eyes. You hear the songs differently. But one of my favorite songs is Vibrations. You released this as a single this spring. And talk to me about that song. How'd that come together?
Man, so as I was processing like why I was unhappy over the past 5 years, I realized that most of the time it's because of the way I thought about things. You know, there's an easy way to look at something, right? So if a deal didn't happen, or if a, you know, I don't know anything. Let's take a deal with music, right? If something didn't happen, I would instantly think, oh man, well, this didn't happen because people don't like me. I'm not good at music or whatever. Like, regardless of Grammys and plaques and all of that, I would feel personally rejected like this. Now I don't think that way. I think, well, this deal closing is just getting it out of the way so that I can get to the better deal, right? And that's anything in life, right? It's trying to think positively about things and knowing that God doesn't have evil for us. He has good for us. He really wants us to do well. So my friend sends me this song, and it was actually for him. He was asking me what I think about an international show, who's doing the hook, and he actually produced it. And I was like, bro, will you please let me have this song for my album? And he took his verse off the song and let me have it for the album.
And this is only one of what, two tracks that you didn't produce?
Yeah, the only ones I didn't produce was Vibrations and Wait.
That's crazy. And I think it's funny too that you wanted to highlight one of the songs that you didn't make. That's interesting. All right. Yeah. Well, here's some of Vibrations. This is great.
Come get a vibe, my vibration. Come get a vibe, my vibration.
Got places I wanna be. I know it starts with me. I gotta see it through.
Come get a vibe, my vibration.
They can't take a thing from me. This where I'm supposed to be. I'm gonna make it through.
Come get a vibe, my vibration. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Top down, cruising I-24. Got the ball working with a fresh 24 hours. Got it out the mud, had to let it grow. Was holding on a couple grudges, had to let it go. Cause if they knew I was going, would stay down. If they want some square, would stay round. I just got paid, picked up my bag. We running off for the day. Yeah, I did all for my chest. Yeah. Way too blessed to be stressed. Yeah. This I feel in your rest. You want more to say less. I'm in my bag, you want paper or plastic. Visa a master, don't even matter. It's all in God's hands, he writing the chapter. Today we not worried, we going higher.
New day, new motivation. Same God, he never changing. Come get a vibe, my vibration. Come get a vibe, my vibration. New day, new motivation. Same God, he never changing. Come get a vibe, my vibration. Come get a vibe.
I'm curious about the process. You're talking about like where you were 5 years ago, where you are today. Do you feel like releasing Nobody's Perfect or making Nobody's Perfect was like healing for you? Or did you write it from out of your healing? Like you have gone through a journey. You feel like you're in a different place now. And then you're able to write with clarity. Or did you write yourself through it? Like, I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I think I've been trying to write myself through it for the past 5 years. Like, there were times I would literally go to the studio and I would try to write something and it would all be sad and just depressing. And it was like, I'm like, I can't put this out. There's nothing in here that I think would add value, right? It's just me lamenting. But man, it really came, and just being honest, a lot of it came from our trips to Refuge. Like feeling seen and having the opportunity to have friends around you, people that care about you. And when I came home and I started writing, I started seeing more light enter into my art. And I was like, dang, okay, something's cooking here, right? And so I think it's a combination of both. I think I was coming on the back end of that season. And that's kind of, honestly, from my very first real music as a quote-unquote Christian artist, that's what I did in college. When I took my walk serious with God in college, the first thing I did was write a song. So I think that's almost like been the beginnings of albums, is when I come out of a season to start writing about it.
Talk to me about scars.
One thing about processing trauma and your story is you have to deal with the actual things that happen. And I used to look at those things. I used to literally tell myself, you are broken. Like, bro, you are, it's a wrap. And as I began to tell my story again with, you know, people and being more open, I realized that those scars are, they're like a superpower, because one, you learn and grow. There's nothing that happens to you that you don't learn from. But also at the same time, man, there's people that are going through the exact thing that you went through, and they're looking for somebody to tell them how to get past it. They're looking for somebody to tell them to even keep trying to get past it. And that's what I realized that my scars were. They were a testament to God's faithfulness to his people. And that's why I wrote that song.
Here it is.
Look in the mirror and I see broken pieces. It's not the glass that shattered. Who am I deceiving? I know I already let you down, but be patient with me. They don't show you how to wear the crown. They judge a slice of your life while trying to live pious. I'm doing fine for somebody that never had guidance. It's my baggage and I'ma carry all of it. But all I'm asking, maybe you would pray for me, cause lately I ain't suffocating on these levels I'm on. The only problem bossing up is trying to manage it all. Feel like I'm on the edge of a building, on the edge of a cliff, on the edge of the earth that's flat. I'm about to fall off of that. Devil on my shoulder telling me to do wrong. I guess the stakes is high for my daylight soul. They'll try to hang me out to dry on the day I fold. But God can clean dirty laundry, that's one thing I know. Yeah.
Man, I could play every track. I can play every track. It's so good. Everybody, you need to go get it. Nobody's Perfect is out literally today. Derek, man, I want to thank you for making this. Like, when I think about kind of the natural thing that happens when an artist releases an album, you know, boom, then they'll tour it, and it's in a video game and this, that, whatever. This feels like not just entertainment. This is art. This is important. It's important, man. And you putting yourself out there is powerful, and I know it's going to impact a lot of people. You know, thanks for taking that risk as an artist. You know what I mean? It's going to make a difference.
And thank you, bro. You were an instrumental part in my healing, man. Like, for sure, just being an ear. That's why at the end of the doc, I had to make sure I thanked you and Prop and Jesse and all the people that saw me at a really, really dark moment, but saw the light that was there, you know, and helped me get through it. So I appreciate it.
I mean, the thing is like, everybody's journey is different. We all have painful things that have happened to us, or traumas, you know, that we feel like we're the only ones, you know? And so it's like, when you come around in true community and talk about real things and let people actually know you and let people in, it's scary, you know, because maybe they'll reject you because, you know, your stuff was too much for them or whatever. But the opposite almost always happens, you know. Now, like, we're bonded for life, you know what I mean? Sure. And that's why when I listen to this album, it's like, oh no, yeah, he's not holding back. He's telling the truth right now, you know. Because I saw it, and man, it's gonna reach so many people. I'm so excited. All right, everybody, Nobody's Perfect is out now. Go stream it. Buy the merch. If Derek's on tour, go see it. Support good art, important art. It's great stuff.
That's good. All right.
Stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. Don't hesitate. The truth is buried deep. It's deep. It's hard to resonate. With the past still on your sleeve, could you roll that up? You're listening to Healy. The song is Amber.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Okay, it's time for your feedback. Last week, we got talking about those big rides, you know, like when you're about to get dropped or flung or whatever, or you're at a park and there's a bit or a lake and there's a big blob and somebody jumps on it and you're flying through the air and you have that moment of clarity. It feels like it's an hour long. It's a microsecond, but it's I immediately regret this decision. We asked you. What are your I immediately regret this moments that you've experienced? You hit us up on X/Twitter and also Threads and Instagram stories. And here are a few of our favorites.
All right, Greg Hackenberg. This is the best one right here. He says, I went down a steep hill on a homemade slip and slide tarp. And when I hit the bump and flew into the air, I knew it was a bad idea to have my one-year-old daughter in my arms.
Oh, my gosh. Bro, I need a follow-up to that.
Follow-up on what happened. You cannot just drop this right here, Greg. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
We're going to assume that Greg's daughter is fine, or else I don't think he'd be replying to us.
Yeah, she got to be fine. But, bro.
Have you guys ever injured your kids? Wow. I've injured my kid. I'm like my own negligence has injured my child, and you just feel terrible. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, it's terrible.
Anyway. Well,
on that note, Kara said that she regrets keeping a turtle that her mom found for her daughter for one of their hometown's annual turtle races. By the way, how are things in Mayberry? the town turtle, you know, who hasn't had a mishap at the old town turtle race? The annual town turtle race.
Crazy.
She said, I made him a nice home in a sandbox and he quickly escaped when I wasn't looking. Who knew turtles could climb? I do want to, I think there's one adverb that I would change. Quickly escaped? I think you were probably gone for quite a bit of time. If there's one thing I know about turtles, even turtles that are racing turtles for the annual town race, they're probably not going anywhere very quickly. I think
turtles are mean, dude. Like, they're. If you
snapping
turtles will take your fingers off.
But like, Kara acted like she turned her head and the turtle just ran away.
Split like she was with like Raphael and Michelangelo over there.
Kara, you know, ran some errands and came back and then realized that you know little Michelangelo had made his escape.
Yeah. Rachel said, "Anytime I go on a youth trip," basically she said, "Anytime I'm with teenagers."
Well, the question is. Is she a participant or a leader? Like,
or, oh, yeah, true. She looks kind of young.
Or is she a youth? Yeah.
Yeah, Rachel. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I always regret
They're
it,
always
too.
Always regrettable. Yeah.
Always. Did you ever do lock-ins, like, at your church?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Let's put all the teenage hormones.
Exactly.
And lock the doors.
That was not a good
idea. People would get injured at playing dodgeball and stuff, and make girls cry.
There's the
couple
concerns.
That went
that
off.
That ends up down in the Sunday school room, down there in the nursery hall. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Don't know where they went for
making
an hour.
Making nursery babies. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we know where they went. We just wasn't going to snitch.
Yeah.
We knew what was going
on. There was a code for lock-in. Yeah.
There's a code. Don't break the code.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't tell your parents what happened. You don't snitch on the couple that
what happens here. Pastors will not leave these walls. The secrets are locked in as well. Yeah.
I just, like, as a church, I just don't understand who thought that was a good activity for teens, you know. Anyway, all right, there's more feedback where that came from. You can go check out our mentions if you want to read it. Okay, it's time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
All right, well, at the beginning of the show, we were talking, well, not the beginning, it's Stern Buzz, we were talking to Emily about The Bean, and it got Jesse lamenting overrated, you know, national landmarks. We want to know your thoughts. You've traveled, you've seen them, you've been there. What, in your mind, is the most overrated kind of destination or, you know, famous landmark that you've seen or experienced yourself? Hit us up on X at Relevant Podcast and all the other socials as well, and we'll read our favorites on next week's show.
Have you guys ever been to the White House? Because I've been, I think, under four administrations. The yard looks terrible every time. I'm like... This is, who's cutting the grass here? Who's responsible for the landscaping here? Every time I am shocked, you know? And again, it's not, this is not a political thing because I've gone under, like I said, multiple
administrations
of various parties, you know, since I was a kid, I've been going to DC. I've lived pretty close. Every time I'm shocked at the state of that lawn.
That's why we're waiting on the Green Party to finally get in.
They're going to fix all of it.
They're going to fix it all.
Man.
First
all
order
right.
of business.
Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Derek for sitting down with us and talking music and telling us all about his new project. Go get Nobody's Perfect. It's out now. It's been worth the wait. Go get it. Also, couple updates. If you want to stay in touch with everything we're publishing, make sure to head over to relevantmagazine.com every day. We're covering the intersection of faith, culture, and everything in between. If you want to get just the best content, cut all that riffraff out of there. Sign up for our newsletter. It's on the homepage and on the sidebar of all the articles. Just put in your email address and you will get our top five trending articles sent to you every weekday morning. It's a great way to stay in touch because the social media algorithms kind of... hide things a lot of times now. Also, if you like the music you hear on the show, go check out our Spotify playlist. We have a Heard on the Relevant Podcast playlist that we update every week or after every show, actually. And we have a worship playlist and indie and hip hop playlist as well. Follow us on all the socials. We are posting all the time on Threads and X and Facebook and occasionally on Instagram. Well, Instagram stories we're pretty consistent with. Instagram and TikTok sometimes as well. We're either Relevant Magazine or Relevant on all of the platforms. Go find us. And make sure to check out the summer issue of Relevant before it is gone. We have a great cover story with Lauren Daigle. We have Arizona, Drew Holcomb, Naomi Rain, a bunch of other amazing conversations and think pieces. It's available for free. Just click the magazine tab at relevantmagazine.com. All right. On that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
Go get Derek's new album right now, wherever you get your music.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
Every time I'm shocked at the state of that lawn.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.